You know, transportation is not just about us driving our individual cars. It's not about people who ride the bus all the time or part of the time. It is definitely a multimodal, different modes of transportation, and intermodal type of a thing. And as I've gotten older and dealt with some health issues, I realized that, you know, if I can share something that helps advance transit, which to me is a broader concept than just public transportation, then I'm kind of obligated to do that. You know, it's part of giving back.
Welcome to the Community Center for Marengo Urbanism, a show about bringing people together throughout our city and beyond by enhancing public services and spaces where people gather and live their lives. I'm Kyler. I'll be your host for today. I'm an architect and design communicator based out of Oklahoma City. Today, I'm joined by a very special guest who will be helping us answer the question, what does it take to improve things like transit in a place like Oklahoma City? Larry Hopper, welcome to the show. Could you start us out by telling us a bit about who you are and sharing some of your background?
Sure, yes. I'm Larry Hopper. I'm an urban planner of many, many years and basically born and raised here in the metropolitan area. It's great to be able to be a planner in your hometown, even if it is like 600 square miles like it is. And you know, I just wanted you to know that basically I've always wanted to try to do things to make Oklahoma City and the region a better place, basically through planning. Okay. In fact, even back when I was in the sixth grade, they asked us to look into an occupation you might like. So I wrote this, I researched city planning. What is city planning? I wish I could find that. But the interest dates way, way back to when I was a little kid. And, you know, in my own case, you know, I've been the planning manager or principal planner or planner for what's called the Transit and Parking Department at Oklahoma City. Think of that as doing business as Embark, okay? Because that's really what they do. And, you know, my interest has always been in trying to help the public interest, okay? The greater good, the greater public interest. And, you know, as far as my career goes, I worked in the city's planning department for almost 20 years, and then that last 20 or so with Embark. And something else that you might as well kind of know is that I'm a cancer survivor. I was first diagnosed back when I was like 26. That's the one that changed my life. And really got me thinking I needed to do more, you know, as a planner, try to make more things happen that, you know, in the way that a planner can. And then it came back about 10 years ago, and it's given me a bias towards action. I'm definitely one of the blessed and fortunate ones in terms of survivability and how things have gone. But maybe that tells you a little bit. But yeah, I grew up here in the Oklahoma City area, and you know, some of those bits and pieces will kind of come out more during the interview.
Yeah. I'd like you to share some of your thoughts on how OKC has developed, where we've been, where we are now, and where we're going as a city.
Wow. Hey, do we have like maybe all day for that? Or just, you know, it can say a lot, and I'll try to, and I knew you were going to ask this question, so I tried to kind of prepare. One thing I think is kind of interesting for people to realize is that basically, if you look back at like Greek history and the idea of the city-states, well, Oklahoma City, in my view, is the modern city-state. One of the only ones really like it, I think, in the country, because it is 600 plus square miles, okay? 600 plus square miles. And most of the things that really contribute to our economy that government would do, they're here. You know, three lakes that we manage here, airports, zoo, sewer treatment plants, water treatment, big parks, you know, lots of things that are really in this 600 square miles. You know, if you think about where we've been, you know, we've been this size now for about 60 years. And if you think about how there really wasn't a settlement here until 1889, about half of the age of the city, we've already been this big, okay? So that's part of where we've been, and it's where we are, and it's part a lot of about what we're where we're going. And I'm bringing it up partly because during my career in the planning department, one of my roles was to analyze annexation and de-annexation requests. Privately, I called myself the annexation czar, but believe me, I didn't have that kind of power. Planners don't. You know, planners really do work through other people, you know, and we try to help people make decisions. We try to come up with the best data and facts we can and work behind the scenes a lot. But, you know, at that size, there's just so much here. And if you think about how we are, that whole fact in terms of where we are and where we've been, some people would see it differently, but in many respects, it really helped manage growth in the whole region, okay? Had we not annexed that, then, you know, Deer Creek might have became a city on its own a lot earlier. Really, they're still out there as a prospect. There might have been cities develop out around between Mustang and Yukon or out southeast of Midwest City where Stella already existed in Nuwala. And, you know, by managing the growth, it meant that there was some control over where infrastructure, water and sewer would go, streets, et cetera. But at any rate, more about the where we've been. You know, if you think about it, the early leaders of the city back in the early part of the 20th century, they were very wise to bring in the stockyards, even though maybe it smells a little bit today, did then too. But, you know, between things like that and the railroads, the city began to grow, and they had the foresight to establish Lake Overholser probably by 1920. And then this idea of the grand vision of the Grand Boulevard, you know, which really is kind of borrowing from the City Beautiful movement. And, you know, the Grand Boulevard, in a way, kind of created sort of a, not really an outer limit of the city, but this kind of circumference that the city, in essence, kind of grew around, and it has had so many impacts on city growth today. It's kind of a discussion in and of itself. But, you know, after World War II, the second lake, Lake Hefner, came into being, and, you know, the city was moving away from transit. It had really a very robust transit system, really by about 1915 or 1920, and that basically was closed down, you know, the streetcar system in the inner urbans by, 1945, 1950. That helped shape city growth, okay? So much of what you think of as being sort of urban Oklahoma City is really very much the walkable city from the streetcar. But, you know, the city grew. Another thing about the post-war period is the city realized that, you know, let's not be hemmed in like St. Louis. It's whatever, 64 square miles, 8x8. Let's annex a lot of territory. And they did, and they got the town of Britton to agree to basically dissolve. And at some point later in my life, we actually dissolved the town of Spring Lake, an amusement park that now is a, you know, career tech center. But, you know, that kind of growth in terms of the annexing of properties really created quite an impact on the region and the way that we saw ourselves, the way we had to plan. And, you know, what it's done is it's made it to where every kind of possible type of lifestyle you can have in Oklahoma City, whether it's to be a farmer or to have 5 or 10 acres or to live a very urban lifestyle or even a downtown lifestyle or the kind of post-war suburban lifestyle, you know, where the houses are on 50 to 75 foot wide. You could have any type of lifestyle you really wanted to. And so we had all of it and a lot of it, okay? And instead of making us sort of a schizophrenic city trying to do everything, it actually just kind of made us more livable and I think has kind of contributed to why we're such kind of a purple city like we are today in terms of politics and a lot of attitudes. And that Plains mentality and civility really is there, you know, and that's part of why we're a friendly type city and all that. It all kind of works that way. Plenty of room for people to get along. And I am one of those who believes that, yeah, it's a good thing we are 600 plus square miles. It'll bode well for us in the future. So where are we going? You know, gosh, we're going to continue to be all these different types of cities within a city. And, you know, there's going to continue to be growth out in the outlying areas. Transit is probably going to become more important in time because one thing that is clear is that we are densifying. You know, we are becoming a more dense city, not just in that area that was walkable from the streetcar, but even in some of the more suburban areas. And I don't mean, say, out close to Surry Hills or Piedmont. I don't mean that. But in so many places, it seems like we're seeing the infill type development, especially between, say, 63rd Street and Edmond. And the same has kind of been true, say, down by Moore. And even things sort of fill in between here and Yukon in a way that they hadn't. And, you know, we're seeing the interior part of the city become more dense, especially that part that's basically from, say, about I-240 north to about 63rd Street. And you know, things like the new accessory dwelling unit ordinance, that'll be interesting to see how it comes out. I mean, that's not a blank check on putting granny flats, quote unquote, in everybody's backyard, but it'll work in a lot of different places. And it looks like there's going to be sort of a slow way of doing that, but it'll do so much to allow for missing middle housing, as they call it. You know, that housing that's more affordable and sort of easier for people to access and afford, and perhaps even cause the owners of those properties a little bit of an opportunity for income, whether that's retirement income or just income to kind of help them get on with their lives. Gee, I could say a lot more, but you know, we have a great trail network. And of course I'd say that because I was fortunate enough to be able to be the project manager on the citywide trails plan back about 1996. And, you know, so much of it's kind of developed out the way that we had planned it, or the way that we and our consultants had planned it. And that's a good thing. And so we're in really good shape there. We're going to continue to see the growth basically probably in all directions. And transit will become more important because, you know, let's face it, traffic is going to become an issue. We're going to have a larger and larger number of older adults, even older than me, believe it or not, if you can believe that, who are driving. And at some point, some of us, maybe all of us, will probably need to stop driving. So what do you do then? Our children a lot of times move away. In my case, I'm fortunate. My family's pretty much still here. But, you know, a lot of older people are going to be alone. And so what do they do? And transit, not necessarily the big bus, is going to be important. but something more like microtransit, which is really another question here. And, you know, and I'd be remiss if I didn't mention, you know, urban renewal. You know, I would probably give a little different perspective than some people. You know, yes, it definitely disrupted communities. There's no doubt about that. It treated a lot of people in a very unfair way. And growing up, I was one of those who wasn't treated unfairly, but I got to participate in the great social experiment that happened once public housing projects were built, because one was built two blocks from my house, but it was a long two blocks, about a half a mile away. And, you know, I got to enter the seventh grade with a lot of youngsters from Hamilton Courts, you know, which is the general side of where today the prospective jail would be built. And that was quite an experience, and probably, and it was a great positive experience, which is sort of a whole nother discussion. But, you know, despite the things that urban renewal had done to a lot of people, it really has resulted in letting us have the land that would have been needed and was needed for a centennial expressway, the Central Expressway I-235 that goes by the Capitol. We really wouldn't have the downtown Myriad Convention Center, Cox Center, soon to be the next arena. It did make room for a lot of skyscrapers. We lost a lot of wonderful two-story buildings and three-story buildings in the downtown area. And you have to kind of remember that, yeah, here is everywhere. The idea wasn't that there would just be federal money to demolish cities, but that there'd be money to rebuild. Those funds really, they never materialized. But, so there was good and bad about urban renewal, but definitely it's like a lot of things in our life. At some point, we have to look at them and say, we have to move on from here, okay? And look for the opportunities that can happen thanks to all this vacant land. And yet there are still a lot of areas, some of which are somewhat feral in our city that still haven't really redeveloped. It definitely forced a type of integration of sorts because there weren't the houses northeast and, you know, not everybody moved into a public housing project. And so in some respects, it did facilitate integration, you know, which was kind of an interesting factor. But I'm kind of getting on a lecture now about urban renewal, and a lot of people aren't going to agree with me that there were benefits, but there were some, you know, but yet we still are facing some scars from that time. So maybe that kind of is enough of an answer to that question. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, definitely. I think, like you said, we could talk about that all day probably. But, you know, that kind of gets a general overview. One of the things you mentioned was that transit is going to become more and more important in Oklahoma City in the future. So I'd like to hear about some of your transit advocacy efforts throughout your career and how those things have developed and where they're going next.
Okay. You know, that's kind of a tough question to answer because, you know, when you work for somebody or an entity and your role is to try to look out for the public interest, your advocacy can't be worn on your sleeve like it really can be if you're just a citizen who's taking an interest in something or somebody in business. You know, when I say advocacy, it's not necessarily always things that maybe I was completely wanting to do. A lot of times it was, you know, a city policy or plan that was adopted and we needed to follow through on that. Now, that's not to say that I and probably any planner doesn't take that and think, well, okay, you know, I see what our objective is, our goal, and, you know, our various objectives and some of the strategies. I might be able to add a little twist to that that really is kind of subtle or not noticed and make some impact. When you think about things like that, in the transit world, there were some big and little things I got to be a part of. You know, I could look around the country and realize back about, 2004 or so that we didn't have bicycle racks on our buses. And I thought, why not? So it was kind of explained to me a little bit about the situation there. Norman, the CART system, they had bike buses. Of course, you know, a bunch of college students, a bunch of young people. Who wants to ride a bike in Oklahoma City, especially back then when we didn't have the bicycle infrastructure we had? But, you know, the long story short is that understandably, my superior at the time explained how, you know, Larry, we're kind of in a season where we're going to be cutting bus routes. It may not be a good optic if we have these shiny new bike racks on our buses, you know, when we're cutting the routes back. And so I kind of just took it on myself along with the work I was doing with the Alliance for Public Transportation. So I guess that makes it 2006 or seven to start raising the money for the matching funds for the bike racks. I'd figured out that we could buy these, put these bike racks on using about 90-95% federal money. And so, you know, in many respects, I kind of single-handedly thought, we need to do this. And I worked through groups like the Oklahoma Bicycle Society. We had a great donor, a guy named Kent Mock, who had a donor advised fund with the Community Foundation. So don't look for him to donate to your cause. But he came out to one of the Bike to Work days. He'd heard about what I was talking about. And on his own, he donated a pretty substantial chunk of money that was probably a third or half the money it took. So we got the bike racks on the buses, okay? Something that was a relatively simple change that really wasn't even really even in our plans, but it made sense. Okay. It kind of fulfilled the whole idea of making transit more user-friendly, increasing transit, reducing air pollution, all the different goals of transit. But another thing was, the lack of bus shelters in Oklahoma City and the lack of sidewalk access to bus stops. This has largely been remedied in our city now, but 20 years ago, a lot needed to be done. And on that, I really didn't do anything publicly except working with the APT to make sure people recognized the issue and got some of the earliest grants to start us to have more than just the bus shelters that were put out by our good partner Outdoor. But those are kind of what I call some of the smaller things, the bus type things, remedial things. But, the whole matter of working on things like bus rapid transit and streetcar and trying to help us land the money to purchase the Santa Fe Depot as a hub, those were all things that really were very much just trying to fulfill the plans that had been publicly adopted and kind of working behind the scenes. Kind of a key one, and this is actually going on today, is the Route 15 and Route 19 matter. Part of my role back in those early years at COTPA in the early 2000s was going out to, say, Midwest City and saying, okay, we love that you are partnering with us and you help fund the Route 15. But this year, we really are going to need more money. Our finance people have said that we're really, to keep this bus service, we need X amount of dollars. And, for 3 or 4 years, I'd keep coming back with these higher and higher figures, and they would keep saying yes. It was, I don't know why, probably part of it was the way we ask, and part of it was the facts. But, advocating for more funds was kind of an important part. Well, this kind of comes back now today. This group that I helped start because of the need coming out of the fixed guideway study plan, we needed some type of a citizen group that would take an interest and in transit and become advocates, grassroots type advocates for transit, for fixed guideway and all the things it said about rail and existing bus. And that group has been resurrected in the past year and a half. Last winter, back to the early part of 2025, we started advocating to improve the Route 15 in Midwest City. And that's what we wanted to do. But at the same time, we started to find out about a month into it that Embark was planning to totally eliminate the Route 19 to Spencer and to the rural parts of rural Ward 7. Well, both of those areas didn't have a city and county commissioner, and they didn't have an elected city council member. So in many respects, they had no advocates. And so the APT, a group that I was helping, we kind of worked in their behalf, okay? And a lot of the things I knew or learned back when I had worked for Embark came in to be very useful. And basically at the end of May, after we'd convened a lot of different people, a lot of different meetings, came to meetings and spoke, not with our, not pounding on the podium, but just in a civil, rational way. The route was saved. Route 19 was saved. The Route 15 never got further addressed. We're still hoping we can. But the Route 19 was saved for a year to find a better solution. And that's great. That's kind of a good example of advocacy that I've been able to be involved in. But more important, have been able to kind of find other people who believe that there's a lot of aspects of transit that are important, the big and the small. The smaller issues as well as these bigger issues going forward about things like rail transit, things like that.
I think that those efforts are really good. So I'm also curious to hear now some of your thoughts on where OKC is at right now with its transit planning efforts, including things like the RTA, which is where we met originally, was at the Regional Transportation Authority meeting. There's also MAPS, which is the Metropolitan Area Projects, buses, and then the long-range transportation plan that ACOG is working on.
Right, yes. There's so many different long-range plans, really, that have been done, really, just in the last 2 or 3 years since the pandemic. When we talk about planning for transit in Oklahoma City, I think we're kind of synonymously saying for the region, okay? Because, even though we're 600 square miles, wow. Even in the Embark existing system, those 20 or so routes, they are mostly in Oklahoma City, but they either pass through a corner of or part of or clip, a mile or so of a corner of cities like War Acres and Moore and Bethany and Dell City and Nichols Hills and The Village. And I'm about to run out of breath here. So, a lot of different cities that actually the bus routes touch. And I'd kind of be remiss if I didn't mention that everywhere where there's a fixed bus route like that, within 3/4 of a mile of that route, okay, you have this line within 3/4 of a mile of that route, mile and a half wide swath, Embark is obligated to provide paratransit, more the curb to curb type service where a smaller vehicle comes to a person, say, home and takes them to a destination and back if they qualify. So you have to talk a little bit about Embark and what they're planning and what they're doing. They did a very detailed comprehensive operations analysis, which is another type of plan called the OKC Moves Plan. And that's a useful and interesting plan. It even talks about some of their thoughts about what to do with Microtransit, which, you know, is sort of a transit agency acting like Uber, and sometimes in conjunction with one of those transit-connected entities like Uber, Lyft, or whatever. So, you know, Embark alone in the city, they're looking at, they're trying to take the funds they received from the most recent geobond issue, 2019 or so, and add two new bus rapid transit routes. We already have the Northwest Rapid, which really is our best example of high-capacity transit, frequent transit, very user-friendly. You know, it has those streetcar-like type-looking stations, and I'm so excited that we've got that in place and seems to be working like we thought it would. I think they've already come up with alignments for the Northeast and the South route. The sticking point will be, which one do you do first? And you know, there's not enough MAPS money to build both of them, okay? And so federal funds are going to become very important for those two plans, as well as things like the RTA and others. This whole question of federal funding, you know, this past 8 months or so has become very much more in question. Okay. I don't really care what anybody would tell you. I think we can all look at that and see the writing on the wall. And whereas we used to think that, oh, you know, a federal New Starts funds might pay for 50% of a valid, merit-worthy project. Don't know if that's going to be the case. You know, transit is a very expensive thing to build. And so it may rely more upon the local funding aspect and even the state funding. But, you know, state funding has never really materialized in a very high amount for transit in our state so far. Advocacy and awareness becomes really important. So, you know, it'll be exciting to see that happen. But when that bond issue was passed and I was still on staff and we were trying to contribute the departmental ideas to it, we started using this phrase called advanced transit in that bond issue, and that was sort of code for the BRT extensions, but also for the capital needs to start some forms of microtransit, okay? And not really sure how much has really been done. I'm not even sure how high a priority that was in those MAPS discussions, because remember, when you're trying to do a laundry list for the 600-square-mile city, not everything gets done at once. You know, MAPS is a pay-as-you-go type of a deal. Very prudent, very, very prudent. But, you know, that means that you know, if you had, whatever, $100+ million a year, sounds like a lot of money, but by the time you do some parks here and these roads and those trails, that thing gets done quickly, you know, because it really can't. I mean, let me put it this way. A lot gets done pretty quickly, but... But you don't spend everything on buses in year two, and you don't build all your trails in year one or your part. You know, see what I mean? I think you see what I mean. So that's that. But then you've got the RTA, the Regional Transit Authority. And, you know, perhaps you've already done a podcast about it, but it probably needs a lot more exploration because the Regional Transit Authority of Central Oklahoma is a legal entity. It's legal. It's basically not a creature of the city. It's not a trust of the Oklahoma City. It really is comprised of the representatives appointed by Norman Edmund in Oklahoma City. Earlier in its life, a short life, those last 5 years, Del City, Midwest City, and more were part of it, but they withdrew. And why they withdrew is understandable, but kind of worth more time at another time. So basically, the RTA, the Regional Transit Authority, they are the ones who are trying to, in essence, carry out what was planned for back in the 2005 Fixed Guideway Study Plan, okay? They've done some plans that are basically supposed to supersede what was done back in 2005. And yet, in so many ways, the more things change, the more they stay the same. There's even some, just kind of a quick thing to think about is 20 years ago, our consultants concluded, and they're really, I think they were on track, that yeah, our region's going to have to basically build its own rail lines in its own right of way. We're going to have to own the dirt and build the rail and the bridges and yada, yada, yada. The RTA, really, these first several years has kind of taken more of an approach of maybe we can lease access to the Santa Fe line. You know, really, I thought, well, you know, that's going to be a lot less expensive way to get it started, you know, and I could definitely see the benefits. It sounds as though in recent months, that's coming more and more under question about whether that's going to be feasible or not. And so one of the options that they're discussing somewhat is, well, maybe we need to find the right of way on the dirt, as you might put it, and build tracks. And maybe there's a hybrid solution. I don't know. So the RTA, long story short, they've adopted what's called a systems plan. And that's what the 2005 fixed guideway plan was as well, was a systems plan. How should the entire system look? With a lot of details back in 2005 about ridership and cost projections, phasing plan of which gets built first and all that. And the RTA has come up with a systems plan, and they've also done some specific corridor studies, the north-south, you know, Edmonton-Orman through Oklahoma City, one that would be a corridor out to the airport, one that would be a corridor from basically downtown to Tinker, another one out to around, say, 15th and Sarah Road, not Mustang or Yukon, but that large part of Oklahoma City, that fast-growing part out west in Canadian County. So, you know, that's kind of what they have there. Systems plan, which is a long-range plan. And then ACOG, the Association of Central Oklahoma Governments, is basically a quasi-governmental entity that all the major, all the cities, really, 25 cities or so, belong to in the region, where they try to work out matters of regional concern. A lot of federal money comes down to them. The 911 system is really an ACOG creature of sorts. But really, it is ACOG. And so they do a lot of great things for the region, not well understood probably by the general public. But part of how, because a lot of federal money comes down through the region, not through the state DOT, but through ACOG, they also, ACOG has to put together a long-range transportation plan and revise it every 5 years. And, you know, the transit aspect has become more and more important. And that's why they're doing the the Central Oklahoma Long-Range Transportation Plan, something like Color TP. You know, it was one thing you might look at that. And they don't call it Color TP, but, you know, but that does remind me when we were trying to plan for the BRT, the Northwest BRT, one of the things that I glommed onto is how the U.S., I'm changing the subject slightly, the U.S. DOT, they put out a grant for technical assistance for cities that wanted to do healthy transportation planning. And I thought, ha, you know, I'd gotten more involved in the public health world here locally. Saw the, you know, how public health and transit basically were two fraternal twins separated at birth back about 100 years ago. And I thought, great. And so the thing that they called this was something like public health and transportation corridor planning, which if you take that PHATCP, it's FATCP. And I thought, how the heck could you come up with a program where the acronym would really say FATCP? But I thought, that's kind of funny. It's different. But at any rate, back to ACOG. So they're doing their long-range transportation plan so that they can feed that into their, you know, multimodal, you know, roads and bridges and all types of transportation update plan. And it's trying to also look at how existing forms of transit like bus would integrate with this prospective rail system. And when I talk about the RTA, I'd be remiss if I didn't say, hey, it's not just about the commuter rail they're talking about, but some of these lines are recommended for a bus option, like bus rapid transit. I don't think any of them are really recommended for streetcar. And all that gets into the whole, which we won't get into, but the whole discussion of what does it cost to build certain modes of transportation, you know, like rail, bus, or streetcar, commuter rail, and what does it cost to operate them? So that's kind of where it's at. So when you ask about the long-range plans, kind of which one are you talking about? Because there's about four or five out there, and you know, it's not that hard to kind of come and understand them, but it helps if a person does kind of familiarize themselves with that. But the one thing that's key to all of them, really, is money and regional cooperation, okay? And those are two very, very important facts that really need a lot more exploration and frankly, probably more transparency, especially by the RTA about what things might cost, what they might cost to operate. Like a lot of the great things that we want and need in this world, they're expensive, but they're worth it, you know? And especially if you can phase it and get it the right size when you start with, you know, the prospect of expansion, you know. Probably by the time it's built, everybody listening to this will have white hair like this, you know, kind of dignified look I have, you know. But, you know, it'll be worth it if you get involved now and work towards helping some of this happen.
Yeah, definitely. I'm curious if there's any other topics that you think are related to this that maybe are worth looking further into.
Yeah, that are related to this. Okay. I'm glad that you said that because I have some topics that aren't related. Well, you know, one of them is this whole matter of how will older adults get around? Okay. I'm still driving, you know, and I'm probably one of those where you're going to have to hide the keys from me someday, you know, to get me to stop driving. It's kind of what we did to my grandmother who turned 90 years old. She couldn't get into her garage because we had kind of stolen the padlock keys, you know, to her little detached garage. And she never asked any questions. But, you know, that whole matter of how are older adults going to get around if and when they decide to stop driving or stop wanting to drive, say, all the way across the region? You know, I mean, most drivers are going to be safe within a couple of miles of their house. But at some point, they're not going to drive as much. And there's a lot of older adults. How are they going to get around? And so that's kind of something that's related to this whole question of what should happen someday. You know, another one really is when the RTA, which really has been planning on a sales tax election, I don't know if it's a half cent, three quarter cent, or a penny. I don't know. I don't think they've really been very public about those musings. But there was talk that that would be an election in 2026. Not sure, you know, but that's one thing that was, you know, stated publicly maybe a year ago. It's kind of like, how is that money going to be used? Just for rail, you know, or does it make sense to use some of it perhaps for roadway construction to make it more palatable to voters? Or maybe some of it should be, and this is kind of one of the places where I think the Alliance for Public Transportation, APT, is going, maybe some of it should be used to bolster existing forms of public transportation, such as the bus somewhat, but especially things like microtransit and curb-to-curb transportation and contracts with nonprofits and others that can fill in some of these niches that really Embark is probably not well-suited to handle or would be very expensive as a provider of. So those are just a couple of things. But, you know, this whole matter of how people travel and get to work is important. I'm going to kind of throw in one that's not a transit issue. That's just one that I've spent a lot of time on. And so indulge me here for about, 30 seconds, I think. I don't think we'll go through a time warp. I think 30 seconds is enough. Imagine that you're in Norman at Rock Creek Road and 12th Street over by Norman High School. Well, that road, 12th Street, goes north into Moore and becomes Bryant Avenue through Moore, and then Bryant Avenue in Oklahoma City again, then Bryant Avenue in Del City, and gets all the way to the river. Right now, that's a relatively low traffic two-lane street. I've worked on a project that all the cities know about of trying to make that basically one of the region's commuter bike routes, okay? Commuter bike routes, not just a recreational ride, with the idea that for now it's just a bunch of sharrows and signs, and in a few places the trail already exists. And then as over the next 20 or 30 years, remember about that white hair thing, you know, as the roads are widened and improved, then maybe there are some bike lanes or separate paths. And it's kind of important because, you know, it's where there's two different career tech centers on that route, okay? A lot of opportunity for training. The largest new job node in the region is that square mile at Bryant and I-240. And so there's a lot of jobs that people could commute to. Now, remember, a lot of times people aren't going to ride, you know, 8 or 10 miles to go to work. But with the advent of electric bikes, commuting to work by bike is going to become more and more important. And not just for people that, you know, have plenty of money, and this is a cool thing to do. But for a lot of people who really can't afford a car, car insurance, and all the other things, you know, sadly, even though I think of electric bikes as something cool, I realize for a lot of people, they may become part of the necessity of how they get around. And so this 12th Street and Bryant Bikeway thing, I applied for a TSET grant for that on behalf of really some cities. We didn't get funded, but it's still an idea that needs to happen because before you know it, oh, there's going to be some four-lane roads out there that are pretty inhospitable to bicycle users. And if you can integrate that with transit, there, we'll kind of bring it back to this, even better, okay? And it does cross some bus routes and could do even more. You know, transportation is not just about us driving our individual cars. It's not about people who ride the bus all the time or part of the time. It is definitely a multimodal, different modes of transportation, and intermodal type of a thing. The bike and bus thing, that was part of the whole impetus for really wanting to get the bike racks on the bus, because the bike rack basically expands the reach of the bus by, you know, who knows, 2 or 3 miles, because it's ride the bus and then, you know, your job is at Hobby Lobby 3 miles off the bus route. Well, at least now you don't have to ride 15 miles. You just ride 2 or 3 or a half a mile to some job that's off a bus route, blah, blah, blah. So understand how, you know, these different modes of transportation interrelate. So, you know, that's kind of a long answer, but those are some that do kind of relate to transit. Although I'd love to talk about the trivia stuff, like, you know, why is it that all the north-south streets have this weird curve in them when you get close to Wilshire Avenue? To me, those are bits of trivia that are fun to talk about.
Yeah, I agree. And I think it may be worth having you back on the podcast in the future to, you know, to talk about something other than transit, because there's clearly so much that's all, it's all connected in a way.
Yeah. Thank you. I'd love an opportunity to come back and be on your podcast to talk about one thing or another, you know, but even a deeper dive into some aspect related to transit. Okay. It's something that still means a lot to me. And as I've gotten older and dealt with some health issues, I realized that, you know, if I can share something that helps advance transit which to me is a broader concept than just public transportation, then I'm kind of obligated to do that. You know, it's part of giving back.
Yeah, for sure. So if anybody else listening is interested in getting involved with planning efforts, either in their community, which may or may not be Oklahoma City, how would you recommend going about that?
Okay. I think one of the best ways is through a local 501c3 called the Oklahoma Alliance for Public Transportation, APT. The Alliance for Public Transportation is that group that helped, quote unquote, save the Route 19 for a year. We've done some how to ride the bike classes. We're trying to do something that may be helpful for older adults who want to maintain their mobility after they stop driving. And we hope to get more involved as kind of a neutral information source, but at times an advocate in relation to the RTA and this upcoming election. It's so hard for an individual to go out and really get active in things, but if you can work with a group of people, great. We've got a board of about, six or seven people. I serve as their unpaid administrator, but they're a group that has already got a little bit of a track record this last couple of years, and it's a lot of what I call younger people, you know, people under the age of 45 or under the age of 40 who seem to be some of our most active supporters. Not a membership organization. We look for supporters. So try them. Don't yet have a website, believe it or not. We had one years and years ago, but that kind of dissolved, and we're in the process of trying to reestablish one so that people can access our information and reach us 24/7. But the Oklahoma Alliance for Public Transportation, been a 501c3 for over 15 years now, and that'd be a good avenue to work through. Strength in numbers and a good opportunity to find people you can talk to, match wits with, and kind of discuss these issues with.
Yeah, for sure. I'm hoping to get involved myself.
Great. That'd be great.
Cool. Larry, it was great to have you on the show, and I hope to have you back at some point in the future. Thanks for a good conversation.
Thank you for the opportunity. I appreciate it very much.
Hey, it's me, Kyler. If you enjoyed this conversation, please be sure to give the show a like, rating, subscription, or whatever kind of nice feedback you can provide on whatever platform you're watching or listening from. If you'd like to join our community to stay up to date or to discuss anything you heard in today's show, consider joining the Aringo Urbanism Discord server. And finally, if you'd like to support the work of Aringo Urbanism directly, you can do so over on Patreon. Until next time.